dollar. In fact, no, brother man, here, have two. $2 means...
Hello, Gamecocks. This is T-Bone with the RubberChickensBlog.com. I am in front of the hallowed Buckshots microphone this morning to review the 1993 Gamecock football season. The 1993 Gamecock football season was one that was important for me for many reasons. I'll discuss those as we continue in. But the biggest was probably this was the year that my casual fandom became an obsession. I was in school at USC at the time, attending all the games. I was living with the G-Man in a platonic situation. We both had serious girlfriends. But Buck has asked me to review this season, which I guess is a tribute by him to my memories from that year and thanking me for my years of dedicated service to the Gamecock Nation. Or it might just be that he's so tired after the marathon session that was the 1992 season review that he needs a break. I'm not sure. I'll leave it to all of you out there in the Gamecock Nation that are listening to decide. Anyway, the 1993 season, it's hard to really reflect on the 93 season without talking about the way the 92 season ended. I'm sure for those of you that listened and for those of you that lived through it, the 1992 season ended on such a high note. The Gamecocks won 5 of their last 6, including just a thrashing in the drizzling rain in Death Valley. Where Steve Tannehill signed the Tiger Paw and all that jazz. I was at that game sitting in the Clemson student section and having the time of my life. So the Gamecock fandom I had up to that point, which dated back to Big George, became an obsession. And during that offseason, I read everything. This was really before Al Gore invented the internet, so I didn't have an opportunity to see a lot online, but I remember swiping spurs and feathers from outside people's doors and things like that. Ready to go with the 1993 season, I went to the first game at Georgia, and I'd heard a lot of bad things about going to Athens. But let me just tell you that I've been to Athens many times now because, as you may or may not remember, I am married to a Georgia grad. So been there many times, never had a bad time, never. Through wins, losses, doesn't matter, always had a good experience there. This year was no different, my first year. It was burning hot that day. The game must have been on CBS because it was an afternoon contest. But I remember it was burning up hot. There was some rain involved. There was a good bit of alcohol around me in the stadium, and I'm sorry to report to you that I may have been overserved. A lot of the game is a blur. But I do remember coming to and realizing, hey, wait, we just completed a pass down near the goal line, and we may have a shot at this thing. And remember the stadium going crazy when Brandon Bennett was stopped the first time, and then when he dove over the top on the very same play, run again for the score, and the Gamecock win. That call is out there, and it's something, you know, that's received some degree of fame, but I'm frustrated that I can't find the call of the final few seconds of that game that's either just Larry Munson's call or Bob Fulton's call. The videos that are out there that I can find splice the two together, and I don't like that. So if anyone wants to email us or post a comment on Twitter where you might know of a better version of that, I would appreciate it. Anyway, coming out of that Georgia game, we were ranked. We moved up to number 19, which I believe at the time there was just a top 20. Somebody may need to check me on that, but I don't think there was a top 25. I think it was just the top 20. But we moved in at number 19. At that point, we had won 6 of our last 7 games. And so we were feeling on top of the world, and we immediately went to Arkansas and lost a close game, 18-17. Obviously did not attend that game as it was very far away, but I remember listening on the radio in a watering hole down in Five Points that's known as Sharky's. I don't know if Sharky's is still there, but it seemed like to me that every single call that Bob Fulton made involved a sack of Steve Tannehill or a rush for 7 or 8 yards. That Arkansas team was coached by Danny Ford, so it was something of an old nemesis for us, but in my memory, they shut us down with strong defensive line play, and they grounded out on the offense. So we dropped to 1-1, came back home, played Louisiana Tech. I left that game at halftime. which is usually a good sign. I find that I stay longer for the losses than I do the wins. I don't know why that is, but I remember leaving at halftime. Then there's a Kentucky game. We played Kentucky at home, a 21-17 loss that I have absolutely no memory of. That Kentucky team, coached by Bill Curry, a decent Kentucky team, but I cannot remember how that game played out. That Kentucky team would end up being important for the year, and I'll talk about that in a little bit in a frustrating way. We then played Alabama at home, a game that I remember very well. We played strong defense that day. Either that or Alabama was content to get 3 yards a carry all day. I remember they didn't score a touchdown until late in the second quarter, and I thought we had a shot in that game all the way until the final minutes. It ended up being a 17-6 loss, and I don't remember if that's two field goals or a touchdown that we scored, but I do remember feeling like we just need one break, and we're going to beat these guys, which was a huge improvement over the last year when we had played them, if you remember that from the 92 review. Anyway, it came out of that game feeling pretty good. At that point, we were 2-3, which is not how we envisioned this year playing out, if you'll remember. Played East Carolina at home, and we pretty well waxed them. The Pirates were a monkey on our back throughout the 90s, and so it was nice to get a win 27-3. It seems to me that game was a pouring down pour. That was a deluge. I think that was the game, because the entire east upper where I was sitting that day had to be emptied because the floodwaters coming down. But I believe that's the game we won in the monsoon. We then went and played at Mississippi State, a 23-0 loss, which looks strange when you look at it on paper now. But you have to remember those Mississippi State teams were perennial top 15 teams and played great defense. That was Jackie Sherrill and the crew, and they could play some ball back then. We came home and beat Vanderbilt 22-0. I remember that game vaguely. I remember never feeling like Vanderbilt could do anything and starting to feel a little bit better about our season. We then went to Tennessee, and Heath Shuler and the Tennessee Volunteers got a huge measure of revenge on us for what we had done the previous year to them. The previous year, we robbed them of a share of the SEC East. And did it in dramatic fashion. So we went to Knoxville. They proceeded to lay 55-3 loss. And I think it was at that point that the rumblings really began about Sparky Wood's job. Came back home to play Florida, a game that looks good on paper, 37-26. But I remember that game, and I remember that it wasn't that close. And then the following week, we played Clemson at home, and Ken Hatfield and Sparky Woods both coached their final games. That was an ugly game, 16-13. Clemson had three or four quarterbacks that played that day, Dexter McCleon, some guy named Solomon, and that linebacker they would walk on either side of the ball, Sapp. And there was another guy they brought in whose name I don't remember. But it was they ran the option all day. Very boring game. We couldn't get a first down. And I remember the students I was sitting with were all very, very restless. At one point, my future bride looks at me and says, "How about next week we go find a real football game to watch?" So she may have still been smarting from the Georgia game. Who knows? But anyway, that wrapped up the season. Sparky was fired, I think, within a few days. Mike McGee let him go. I guess that was Mike McGee. Somebody may need to check that. But I do remember Sparky's final press conference, and his quote at the time was that his only regret is that he was not allowed to finish what he had started. And I remember at the time that quote really irked me because I thought, how much time did you need? You know, we were basically getting worse every year he was there. And then when the 1994 team came along and you saw some of the talent that was on that 1994 team, I kind of reconsidered and understood what he was saying. I think the view of history probably is that Sparky Woods was a man that was hired to do one job and found himself doing a different one. He was hired to coach an independent team and found himself in the toughest football conference in what was the toughest football division in the country. And so I think maybe history will view Sparky better than we did at the time. One way to judge Sparky's legacy is to think about the 1994 team that Brad Scott inherited from Sparky. And then think about the team that Lou Holtz inherited from Brad Scott in 1998, or after the 1998 season. Marked difference. Kind of looking at it from the way politicians say, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? So I think history will be kind in the long run to Sparky Woods. We went around looking for a new head coach. We thought, you know, what if we hired the offensive coordinator for the best team in college football? And that will be what we talk about in the 1994 review, which I guess will be Buck again. But before we stop, a couple things. One is that Kentucky team, that Bill Curry-coached Kentucky team, one of the most frustrating bowl games I have ever seen, the Peach Bowl against hated Clemson. Hatfield had been fired. They had brought in Danny Ford's ugly twin brother, Tommy West. And Tommy West coached just the bowl game, just like Danny Ford had coached just the bowl game his first year. And they were all excited up in Tigertown. Anyway, Clemson is driving in late in the fourth quarter in that game, and Kentucky is up 13-7. I believe it was Patrick Sapp threw an interception to the Kentucky linebacker. Everyone I was watching began to celebrate because that was pretty much going to seal the win, and the Kentucky linebacker tries to return the interception. I don't know why he did that, but he immediately is hit and fumbles the ball back to Clemson, who gets a reset of downs, and then I think two plays later, scores the tying touchdown, and then the extra point gave them the win. And the delusions in Tigertown were on. They'd gotten themselves another Danny Ford. So anyway, that's a look back at the year. The players on that team, Steve Tannehill, obviously. Toby Cates was a big member of that team, wide receiver. There was a guy named Marcus Robinson, who I think may have gotten his first playing time that year, a guy that we just never really were that impressed with, until he got in the NFL and tore it up for several years. He was a great NFL player. Marcus Robinson was on that team. One of my favorite all-time Gamecocks, Stanley Pritchett, wore 39. And that was, I guess, his first year playing. He was spelling Brandon Bennett or playing a little fullback as well. And I loved watching Stanley Pritchett play, one of my favorite Gamecocks. And then the great Randy Wheeler was also on that team, who has proven to be a winner both inside and outside of football since. Those are my memories of the 1993 year. Again, my first year of really dedicated fandom. We ended the year on a sour note, but the next year would be pretty good. Pretty good with these same cast of characters, but a new head coach. So I'll leave that to Buck. Again, this was T-Bone with the rubberchickensblog.com. Happy to sit in for Buck here on Buckshots, and thanks for listening. Now that I know him, to give him money is a charity. He gives me some knowledge, I buy him some shoes. And to think blacks spend all their money on big colleges, still most of y'all come out confused. Go ahead, Mr. Wynn. Go ahead, Mr. Wynn. Mr. Wendell has freedom, a free that you and I think is dumb. Free to be without the worries of a quick to this society, for Mr. Wendell's a bum. His only worries are sickness and an occasional harassment by the police in their chase. Uncivilized, we call him, but I just saw him eat off the food we waste. Civilization, are we really civilized? Yes or no? Who are we to judge when thousands of innocent men could be brutally enslaved or killed over a racist grudge? Mr. Wendell has tried to warn us about our ways, but we don't hear him talk. Is it his fault when we've gone too far? And we got too far, cause on him we've walked. Mr. Wendell, a man, a human in flesh, but not by law. I bid you dignity to stand with pride. Realize that all in all, you stand tall. Go ahead, Mr. Wendell.